Hey, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you guys are ready for a good show. Ukraine and Israel look like they both kicked off some major operations up over on the front. We're going to have all of that coming to you and a heck of a lot more, including war footage, several new strikes, just tons of stuff that's going to be coming at you guys today. Hope you're ready for a good show. Gamecock Faraday already coming in and getting up to now 5 Speak the Truth memberships before we even get started. And you know what? Prior to the show even kicking off, ladies and gentlemen, I just want you guys to sit back and enjoy a little bit of upcoming of what you have on today's show. I hope you guys are ready for it. Let's go. Hey, why are you talking, man? I didn't tell you to talk. Why do you always do that to me, man? I don't understand why it always does that. It's like, you know, I want to come up and I want to show you guys some cool stuff, and then all of a sudden it just does whatever the heck it wants. Taurus, what's up, brother? Howdy, Matt. Was in Ukraine unveiling mass production of an absolute unit of cruise missile on your 2025 bingo card. No, it actually wasn't on my 2025 bingo card, but holy freaking cow, man. The look from inside that factory. Should have that up in the stack for you guys coming up today as well. Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. Russians, it looks like, are getting their butts kicked over in the east, over near Pokrovsk. And they are doing a dang good job out there. And over inside Gaza as well, it looks like the Israeli Defense Force is just now beginning to kick off Gideon's Chariot 2, which is their mission to surround all of Gaza City. They also have some more footage that's coming out along with the investigation that got done. Matt, don't do clickbait. Linda Liu, this isn't clickbait. Operations are currently underway over inside of Gaza. It looks like they're actually securing the tunnel systems right now outside of Gaza City. We've got early reports of that coming in, and we've got more bombs dropping inside of Gaza City and Deir Abala. All right, so the IDF has upticked their operations over inside Gaza and over inside of Ukraine. You've also got reports of new freaking fighting that's taking place, and it looks like Ukraine is actually pushing in a little bit, doing some good work. Bingo, I like bingo. Yeah, no, you know, oddly enough, it's kind of like these early reports that start coming out, that start showcasing, and you line that up with everything else that's going on, plus things that I'm hearing from people that are over there. Yeah. I kind of tend to think that all of that is real. Now, before we get into any of that, there's something that actually popped up the other day that I just kind of feel like it didn't get addressed and it needs to be addressed. This right here, Guardian reported on it. It's all over social media. Israeli government official charged with slashing 15-year-old girl in Las Vegas. Now, initially, I ended up looking at this name and I was like, is it Knopp? No, it's not Knopp. Actually, I dug into it. This man, oh, you were explaining that. Now, yeah, it's not clickbait. This man actually was working for the Israeli government cybersecurity, and he came into Las Vegas for a conference. Allegedly, he picked up on a 15-year-old girl online and took her to like a freaking circus or some crap. And when law enforcement officials actually arrested him, he had a condom in his pocket and several like other nefarious things. And they obviously tracked his online stuff. But he ended up going to jail. He got booked and was released pending charges, because this is going to be a felony case, soliciting online for a minor, things of that nature. Well, after he got released, he got flown back to Israel. Israeli government came out and they made a statement and said, one of our officials was detained by the police. And that was that. They said that he was being investigated, words to that effect. But the guy wasn't here on a diplomatic visa. He was just over here visiting that conference. And so then he packed up and ended up leaving. Oh, look at that. We've got another troll in the chat, ladies and gentlemen. You gotta love it. Always with the trolls. Yep. And somebody took care of it before I could even get in there. Yeah. Wood chipper, absolute wood chipper. It's funny to me that people will say that, hey, just because you side with Israel, you're going to cover stuff like this up. No, absolutely not. Just like I said, this man, if this is true, 1000% needs to go into a wood chipper. right? That's my belief on that. If that is actually true, if that's what actually happened, he needs to go in a wood chipper. And if the Israeli government is covering for it, yeah, they need to freaking answer. And right now there's a bunch of Republicans in Congress that are pretty freaking pissed off about this, which is funny because the Republicans are the ones that, you know, generally speaking, will support Israel, while the Democrats are the ones that won't. And so when we see things like this, it's amazing how one side of the House in Congress has no problem calling out like their own people that they end up supporting and saying, you know what, this isn't acceptable. Pedophilia, no matter how you freaking wrap a flag around it or whatever you try to call these people, minor attracted persons. No. They are just quite literally pedos, and they need to all be thrown in a wood chipper. I think it's a mental illness that you just can't solve. Guardian ends up putting this out because now they're saying that, well, you know, I think it was like the district attorney or something is Jewish and blah, 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 blah. No special treatment was given to him, period. None. That's what the prosecutors ended up throwing out there. And this is where I was able to lay out and piece all this together, because honestly, when you look into it, there's a bunch of mis and disinformation out there on this entire freaking topic. The guy was arrested. He did pay the standard bail of $10K. All right. And most of the time you're only putting up like 10% of that. All right. And so the guy ends up bailing himself out of jail and then just flying back home as scheduled, as what the Israeli government said. I'm pretty dang sure that if this is actually what occurred, the Israeli government doesn't want to be dealing with this POS either. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did extradite him back to the United States in order to face the freaking charges. But the guy was in town on a business meeting. He wasn't on a diplomatic visa. He wasn't doing anything like that. He was here for like a freaking conference in Vegas and boop, ended up bailing out and going back home on his regular scheduled time. Here's another thing that ended up popping up here in the United States that I also think is a little bit misleading. It's close, but it's misleading. All over the internet, it's reading Egyptian embassy in New York was dragging pro-Hamas protesters into their embassy and beating the crap out of them.
Inside the building. They're bringing the kids in the building. They're bringing the kid in the building. They're beating them with, the chain. Can you guys bring somebody? Bring somebody. They're beating the kid with the chain. Bring somebody. They're beating the kid with the chain. Bring somebody. They're beating them inside. They're beating the kid and his brother. Yes, please.
All right, so this is your first clue that this isn't an embassy. All right, clue number one that this is not the Egyptian embassy is U.S. police officers, New York State cops, or New York City police rushing into the embassy to go like intervene here. That should have been clue number one. This wasn't an embassy. When I first saw this, it kind of like set off my spidey sense. But all over the internet, all I'm seeing is that the Egyptians are dragging in pro-Palestinian protesters and beating the crap out of them. Turns out that's not the case at all. It wasn't even a consulate building, as a matter of fact. Not even a consulate building. If I was to get the actual facts right on this, let me double check, because I ended up finding somebody that actually did a really good amount of research on this. And it's freaking sad. But it was the Egyptian mission to the UN is where that ended up taking place. And they were able to geolocate this particular location just off of the door itself and using some pretty decent keyword searches. Yeah, cops entered, right? And then, as it turns out, that this wasn't even pro-Palestinian protesters. It looks like it was people from the Muslim Brotherhood that were over there giving them freaking crap. And so on and so forth. So why all of this mis and disinformation that's out there floating around? And of course, you can expect it coming from one side that's got to play the victim in certain things, right? Like, I mean, seriously, let's just be real. Hit that like button, you degenerates. Thank you, Tom Tuttle. Way to tell him. All right, well, now that we're all caught up on most of the madness taking place over here in the United States of America that I guess generally resembles what the heck is going on. Let's first go talk about this drone that got intercepted flying in from the west. I'll say that again, from the west, going up over into Israel. Several different weapons, including rifles, pistols, and I heard some explosives, ended up getting intercepted off this drone that was being flown into Israel. So why would that have occurred? Well, drone warfare, as we've seen across the front line over inside of Ukraine and several other locations, absolutely has changed the way some of these things have done. And instead of just smuggling things in where you might get caught doing it and people are watching the ground relentlessly, drones have a very much smaller cross section on the radar. So they're harder to pick up on. So you can actually take these things and fly them in and carry large amounts of equipment, such as you see here, in order to conduct terror operations. Now, if this is making its way, this is probably, I don't know, I've seen a lot of reports of this happening over inside of Gaza. And I've seen reports of this stuff taking place now inside of Israel. And so it kind of makes me wonder whether or not this is going to be the new issue that we start seeing at the U.S. border. I think it's just a matter of time, if it's not already happening, that we have drugs, weapons, you know, explosive devices, things like that coming across the U.S. border from the cartels on drones over here into the United States of America. Oftentimes, certain things that we end up seeing overseas, it takes a little bit of time, but they end up leeching their way over here into the United States. So it's definitely something that I'm worried about. I've said it before. The first recorded time I remember seeing drones being used in warfare with like little explosive device on them, like these little personally bought operated drones, was over inside of Afghanistan. I remember the Taliban was doing it, and it was well over a freaking decade ago when they were actually doing that crap and attacking a U.S. base. And now we've got to the point where they're flying weapons, equipment, smuggling things in and doing all sorts of crap. So yeah, I really do think that this is eventually going to make its way over to the U.S. border. No, that's not C4. That's the box that was packaged in. And then you can see like the little crap twine that they had just kind of, you know, wrapped around the thing in order to get it on there. You go back to the other picture in case I missed it. I don't remember seeing a block of C4 sitting down there on the table. These are all pistols that are wrapped up. You got a couple different rifles, AKs, that are all kind of like sitting out there. And then this appears to be some sort of radio or communication device that they have sitting on the table. So no, I don't think that's actually what was taking place. New footage from the assault actually has kind of emerged, and the IDF did in fact end up launching an investigation. What you're about to see is the terrorists, and I'm talking about the assault that took place yesterday over inside of Gaza. And the IDF had conducted an investigation. We're going to put this up on the screen, and we're going to talk about what actually ended up happening. Some of them did make their way inside of the compound and gotten into a little bit of close quarters battle with the IDF. What you're looking at is some of the airstrikes in response to them going in there. Now, I saw several different statements basically on this tunnel and kind of how the entire thing worked out. But ultimately, oh my goodness, Danny Goland, most drones come from the Egyptian border but carry 2 to 3 handguns. Those are really hard to detect. This one's pretty big, right? I mean, it is a much larger drone, Danny, very much larger drone. But again, you know, the issue that we have here is the overall cross-section of that sucker picking up on the radar, right? And so the smaller drones, yeah, absolutely, with just a couple pistols, harder to detect. Larger drones such as that one, a little bit easier. That box definitely makes it a little bit easier. But you got to picture that, you know, they want to detect objects of a certain size. So who is it that's detecting those objects? And you're opening up, you know, these different windows. And so if you make it too small, now you're picking up on birds and all sorts of weird crap that's like they're floating through the sky. If you make it too big, you're going to miss things like that. And so there's this little niche space, from my understanding of how this works, in a nutshell, of how they end up finding it. Back to this report, though, on this assault that took place yesterday outside of Khan Yunis over in Gaza. What ended up happening was there was a tunnel system, and you'll see it inside of this video. It's on repeat, so it'll come back and forth. This tunnel system ended up being very large, and it was within close proximity to where the IDF was located. BC Skyman coming in, gifting out 20. Now, that tunnel system within itself actually did, or a portion of it ended up getting blasted out by the engineers. They weren't able to destroy the entire tunnel for whatever reason. And so they collapsed a portion of it, left it intact, and then they were going to go back and deal with it. Well, the IDF established a decent base of operations that it was launching assaults out of near that tunnel. And what ended up happening was Hamas ended up tunneling their way around the collapsed portion of the tunnel, right, and working their way back into it. So they just kind of circumvented it and went around, punched through, and then ended up launching their attack out of it. About 20 to 25 is now like the general number that's coming out of this. Ended up coming out of the tunnel. They broke up into 3 different cells. One of the cells did end up making their way in very, very close proximity to that location. Another one actually had made their way inside of the location. And another one was just like launching crap from a distance, to the best of my understanding of the situation. The battle in total lasts about 3 hours. So it's not like these guys were immediately eliminated. They did have tanks actually with inside of that outpost. One of the tanks actually came out, and that is the one that actually ended up running over the dudes that were immediately outside of the compound. And that famous crush video that I ended up playing yesterday. Another one that ended up coming and arriving on scene from a distance ended up blasting some dudes out of a building and taking them out that way. And of course, then we had some airstrikes that were coming in, eliminating the rest of them. So they did a decent job in repelling this attack and pushing them out of there. And again, no Israeli service members actually got killed in this attack. And they did, in fact, come out and confirm that there was a litter that Hamas was carrying. And the thought is that they were going in there in order to capture an IDF soldier in order to take hostage. So, yeah, good on them for trying that. Ultimately, it was a failed operation that they ended up going back. And I hear that they're now going to be working to close that tunnel down just a little bit more significantly. Here is some more footage of some of the counterstrikes that actually took place yesterday. So for those that don't know, that last gun that you heard firing there in that clip was the Apache. And you can actually see, I think the audio is a little bit off on what they ended up releasing. But in the first portion of the clip, you can see the 30 millimeter just splashing down over outside of that target. And so they're lighting that whole place up. And then it comes in from a different angle. And so I'm pretty sure what you're seeing here is an Apache gun team. There you go, up on the left side of the screen and all coming in. Apache gun team lighting this area up, and you are seeing it from two different angles. All right, so two different Apaches that are looking at this thing, likely, at almost like a 90 degree angle when it's up on your screen, and they're zeroing in on these terrorists in order to take them out. And again, that's all stuff that they were doing in order to get rid of those guys that popped out of the tunnel yesterday. So good on the IDF for knocking that one out, and just kind of like taking care of their people. They said that it was, again, between 2025, they think, anyways, they eliminated at least 10 of them, somewhere around a dozen, and all of that other stuff. Israeli military also just came out and issued initial warnings to medical authorities and international organizations in northern Gaza, particularly around Gaza City, for operations Gideon Chariots 2. Ended up getting green lighted yesterday for them to be able to go in. And right now, we are getting initial reports, right, that the IDF has begun to slowly move out and start kind of like surrounding that area. This is, generally speaking, what you're looking at on the map. And I'm going to blow it up just a little bit bigger. This is how it's going to look when they get done. Now, obviously, it's not like this, okay? This entire area right here is not split off. Gaza City is not isolated at all. All right, this whole area is open, but they issued evacuation orders and issued, like, not just for here, but also down for Khan Yunis the other day, all right, to push everybody out of there. Now, what the idea is that this operation going into it is it's going to be conducted in multiple phases. Initial phase of this operation, they're going to be going in and securing all of the tunnel systems and literally isolating it. Okay, so they've been telling everybody to get the heck out of there. They've been telling them to move out. And right now, allegedly, they have started creeping in, and they are now working on those tunnel systems, and they are going to slowly and carefully creep in and actually start choking off Hamas captured inside of Gaza City. Israel hasn't faced that much resistance over inside of Gaza. And so eventually they're going to have to push them back into these little areas like you're currently seeing. And I got a feeling that because of the numbers that got called up, IDF intelligence definitely believes, right, that there is a good chunk of fighters in this area because of how they plan on handling it. So this is inevitably going to be a major battle. They're predicting, I said like 2 to 3 months yesterday, they're predicting this operation to take right around 6 months. So this is going to continue on through the wintertime. Now, after they get done blasting all of those tunnels and cutting this entire area off, that's when they're going to start creeping and moving in on the objective, taking it brick by brick and house by house. All right, going all the way through there. And that's the general idea of it. And current layout, just so you guys can kind of see where it's at, this is what it actually looks like. All right, so if you compare that to, you know, what I just showed you guys on the map a little bit ago versus where they're currently sitting at, you can kind of see the little bit of issue that they have. They're going to have to start coming in and literally isolating this whole area off. Now, we're talking about hundreds of freaking miles worth of tunnels underneath Gaza. And particularly, you know, you've got a good chunk of them that are focused around Gaza City and around Khan Yunis. They have a lot of tunnels that they're going to have to deal with. And so, even Aguilar, when I had him on the show, he brought up that right outside of one of the GHF sites was a tunnel system that nobody had noticed. So they have got to take their sweet time. Some of these things are very, very well hidden, just like the IDF learned yesterday. And just because they blast a particular portion of a tunnel doesn't mean the tunnel's out of commission. So what does that mean? That means that they are going to take their sweet freaking time. And over the next several weeks, probably, we're going to see a lot of tunnel blasting videos that are going to be coming out of there. Now, it is thought that the IDF bumping up this operation and slowly moving forward on it is supposed to be putting pressure on Hamas because they are currently working out a hostage negotiation deal where Hamas is supposed to release at least 10 hostages, right, that are still kept alive. At least, hopefully, 10 are still alive over inside of there in return for a ceasefire for a predetermined period of time. But Hamas, historically, in the past, has wanted those ceasefires to also include, the IDF complete withdrawal of Gaza and an end to the war in general. So that within itself is going to end up being your freaking stall out point. And you've got people inside Israel that are like, you know what? We want to get these hostages released. Go ahead and take them up on that deal. But at the same time, Israel doesn't want to back off of all of the hard fought over terrain that they have because it's not going to change their overall goal of eliminating Hamas. And unfortunately, that's what Hamas tends to put on the plate. And it's been that way for like the last dang year. IDF spokesperson Brigadier General Defrin announced that Israel launched initial operations into Gaza City as part of the major offense targeting Hamas. I'll say that again. IDF spokesperson Brigadier General Defrin had announced that these operations have actually kicked off. All right. So it's a thing and it's going down. And the question just is how quick are they going to move? And like I said before, I think just because of the way the terrain's laid out and the different plans of the operation, it's going to be kind of slow. You're not going to see a lot of the heavy fighting, until likely about, you know, 3-4 weeks from now, probably. So probably pushing sometime mid next month is when that heavy fighting is actually going to start kicking off inside of there. Unless Hamas starts fighting and pushing back. But given their limited numbers and capabilities, it would be wise of them to sit back and wait for the IDF to walk into their ambushes. Undoubtedly, over inside of Gaza City, they've got all of those buildings rigged and ready to freaking blow. That's exactly what the IDF ended up walking in on over inside of Rafah when they went in there last time. So strikes inside of Gaza City over in the Zaatan neighborhood have definitely increased.
Yeah, Allah. غارات ورا بعض هاي الزيتون حسب الله ونعم الوكيل هيك بتبلش صبحات انفجارات بالزيتون ريبورتات متفجرة حسب الله يا عفو الله.
Yeah, I see the question down in the chat, John Bauer. Can we get an update on the American plant hitting Ukraine today? Yes, sir. I do have that coming up for you, along with some interesting little factoids about that American plant that are going to be coming up for you guys here in just a minute. I'm going to finish up Gaza, and then we're going to transfer up over and start talking about Ukraine. Here's some more strikes that ended up taking place. I want to say these ones are in Jabalia, up over right outside of Gaza City. I can't do the music, man. Music freaking drives me nuts, but there you guys can see them. So a film from Jabalia, this could be the same set of strikes that we just saw on the screen. It's really hard to tell, or they could be more strikes. But what we do know is that Israel over the last 48 hours has definitely increased airstrikes. And whenever we see an uptick in airstrikes, now this isn't a lot, these more look like preparatory fires or things like that that are keeping Hamas over at bay. And so whenever we see things like this, it definitely starts to insinuate that the IDF is moving. And when we get that statement from the Brigadier General that's telling us that they have begun their initial operations outside of Gaza City, well, that tells you, right? So they are moving now on these Hamas terrorists that are sitting over inside of Gaza City, and they're slowly, slowly, slowly cutting and isolating them off. Oh my goodness. Al-Qassam Brigade also released a video coming out of that same exact neighborhood where I told you that those strikes were taking place.
تأتي هذه العملية بإذن الله في ظل تصاعد تهديدات العدو الصهيوني تجاه أبناء شعبنا وقطاعنا الحبيب، لنقول له بالفم المليان وبالكلمة العريضة: إنا هاهنا من أمامك ومن خلفك، ولن يكون في ملك الله إلا ما أراد الله.
Now, I want to point something out, because it was also said that Hamas yesterday, after they launched that attack and ambush down outside of Khan Yunis, wasn't really an attack. It was actually an ambush. It was a raid. They actually ended up leaving explosive devices behind. And these are what we call like baited ambushes. Basically, well, they'll attack you. They'll withdraw along a route, hoping that you end up falling over and behind them. Now, I want you to take a look at what these little IEDs are that this gentleman has placed in his hands. 1,000%, that's likely what they're trying to do, all right, is that they are placing these IEDs, all right, prior to launching the attack, and then after they launch their attack, they expect foot soldiers to actually get on the ground and freaking follow in behind them, and then blast them with these IEDs. Now, something that I want to point out about this video, which is, I mean, some people watching this might be like, that's rather shocking. How ridiculously close these guys got. Here you can actually see two IDF soldiers that are hanging out in these windows upstairs in the building. You got a remote operated weapon system that's down here that's likely attached to some cables that go back into that building that these guys are using, you know, in order for like base defense, really, for where they're at. And one might wonder how these guys are able to get so dang close to this building and actually set up, even with these dudes in elevated positions that are looking out. And the reason for that is actually answered in this video when it shows these guys moving. So I want you to take a look at the different terrain that's out here and the piles of rubble that are all over the place. All they're doing is using this defilade to kind of get in there. These little lines of sight that are all freaking clouded are allowing these guys to get in there so dang close and actually launch these freaking ambushes. Now, it's crazy that they're actually able to get that close. But that also speaks to the amount of destruction that's over inside of Gaza and the fact that you still have these freaking Hamas fighters that are down inside of there. I also want you to take a look at the guy that's running at the close, like in this portion of the video. What you're actually going to see is that he's got a bunch of blankets and crap over top of his head. Now, one could say that that's used to break up his outline in order to, you know, camouflage himself as he's moving through all of the rubble and things of that nature. Other thing I ended up looking at, because I have actually seen this myself, what they try to do is they try to cover up their heat signature Matt, please explain. Your knowledge is amazing. I appreciate you so much, and thank you, Mary. I'm not even sure what I didn't do. What they're actually trying to do is cover up their heat signature from the different drones and surveillance and stuff like that that's up above. Because truthfully, they wouldn't be creeping in along all of this deflate. They really don't have to worry about being spotted until they get super duper close. But what they're trying to do is prevent everybody from overhead of seeing them. And that is how they are moving in, launching some of these close attacks, which just goes to tell you, man, like when they end up making their way up into Gaza City, obviously they're going to have to freaking make sure that they take this very, very slow because of what's going on. So it's just all it is right there. He's got 72 transvestites waiting for him. Yeah. Hamas didn't give the outcome of that video or what the actual results were, but that's a new video that ended up coming out of, like I said, Gaza City. Danny Golan, there's a reason they stopped filming after firing the RPG. Doubt it did anything given where it hit. Danny, thank you. I definitely was on my mind to bring up and I totally forgot. And I was really hoping that tank had actually like the reactive armor when he fired that, and it blasted back and ended up taking his butt out. 40 years for me, LOL. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the tanks are extremely strong. I'm sure it rocked. I'm sure it didn't feel good to get hit by that sucker. But I'm also certain that that tank ended up surviving and going on. You got to punch through a lot of armor with that sucker in order to make it happen, and they just simply didn't get it done. This next strike that I'm going to put up on your guys' screen took place is over in Dirabala in Gaza. Now, what do you suppose that is? That to me seemed like a rocket that got freaking struck and it was low ordering. And that is the, holes inside of it that kind of got lit and it's going and like the propellant burning out. Gen X Josh coming in, gifting out 5 Speak the Truth memberships. Thank you, sir. Let me go ahead and get that up on the screen. Watch it again, and you guys can see it going down, and you see it's spitting out of both ends of that particular munition that's falling out of the sky, and that's 100% what I believe the IDF actually struck in this. Watch it again, and you can kind of hear it spattering out. Definitely seems like propellant going out. It was a drone engine. Who knows, man? Personally, I think that was a rocket that they had and that they ended up striking that rocket and that the warhead maybe went off, maybe got blown off, but you've got the propellant that's burning out of freaking both sides. Somebody said RPG. That's definitely not an RPG. Tammy thinks it's a failed rocket. Sounds like a chopper. Dude, honestly, until you go over and take a look at the dang thing when it's done burning out, you don't even know. So, lots of crap on that one. And that was one hell of a strike to be landing that close to people. Also, up over inside of Lebanon, IDF has continued up with their strikes, going after one of Hezbollah's elite Radwan force freaking leaders. IDF is attesting that Hezbollah is not abiding by the ceasefire agreement, so they're actually going off and targeting them. Not only did they target, you know, the Radwan force that's down over there taking out that leader, but they also went after a munitions depot inside of southern Lebanon as well, all right, that Hezbollah had.
Naam.
I don't think that was your push lawnmower, buddy. It's probably a toilet, man. It was probably one of those elusive toilets. You know what I mean? The Russians were stealing toilets last year, and now we have Hamas that's stealing toilets from the local population.
Oh, we found it.
Maybe that's what it was. Here's another angle of that freaking munitions depot being hit. Somebody said pretty, and it's funny to me that you actually brought that up because, you know, when we actually look at fireworks over here in the United States, when we start talking about fireworks and things like that, that are going off on the 4th of July, it's definitely made to mimic these things. And I don't even think a lot of people realize that. They just look at them in the sky and they're like, boom, yay, pretty. That's what we're mimicking with fireworks, in case you guys didn't know. I mean, take a look at that sucker. Look at that. That's exactly what we are trying to freaking mimic with that stuff. So I always love it when people end up commenting weird things like that, because it kind of makes me smile when we get into it. So yeah, just a compilation real quick of them going after Hezbollah. So the IDF is still going to have to deal with them. The Lebanese government is trying to disarm Hezbollah, and they're being met with a lot of resistance up in the northern portions around freaking Beirut. But they are failing to do their job, along with clearly the UN failed to do their job inside southern Lebanon. What does that mean? Well, it means with the IDF going in and crushing Hamas in Gaza, we still have two more freaking operations that are likely to come following the seizure of Gaza, which is going to end up being Hezbollah inside of southern Lebanon. And obviously we have ongoing combat operations that tend to take place over inside of the West Bank periodically. They arrested some major terrorists over there just the freaking other day. And they're doing it with like their SF guys in an undercover way. We're going to take you guys' focus. We're going to shift it from Israel, and we're going to go up over into Ukraine. Up over into Ukraine.
Українське сонце зійшло, хай яскраво світить воно, дорого заплачено.
I don't know, man. I just think that is a freaking baller way of like throwing out freaking Russian flags and standing up a Ukrainian flag. Now, that's pretty freaking awesome. Now, last night got the word that several villages over in eastern Ukraine, five of them in total, had gotten liberated. And that is freaking absolutely amazing. And today we're getting information over near Pokrovsk that the Ukrainian forces from the 25th are actually on a push and on a move. Last 24 hours, it said that they eliminated 200 Russians alone. Now, a lot of people are sitting back and saying, how is it that these Ukrainians are able to do such things, right? How is it the Ukrainians are able to push through the Russian forces? And there's a lot of information right now that's coming out stating that like Russia's strong, Ukraine's freaking weak. There's no way. I want to show you guys something. All right. Texas actually sent this to me, and then I came across it again. It has been released and has been translated. And I want you to pay attention to the quality of Russian soldiers on the front line. So when people are telling you that Russia is really, really strong, and we're going to get into several other portions of this here in a minute, take a look at these freaking Russian EPWs that ended up coming out of their failed assault.
Пришел в военкомат, подписал контракт.
Подписал контракт.
Пришла повестка, 28 лет. Сказали, что если я буду уклоняться, могут посадить.
Подписал контракт. 2.5 миллиона.
2 миллиона 100 тысяч.
So, yeah, we'll start off with the first guy. Ended up getting conscripted and then was forced to sign a contract or else he was getting arrested. So it starts there. And then they're going to go over how much they got paid and why they chose to accept it and what they ended up getting told. Yes, EPW, Enemy Prisoners of War. Freaking enemy prisoners of war, EPWs. Sorry about that, guys. I tend to spit out different things.
600 тысяч. Я пришел на украинскую землю за 2,5 миллиона рублей.
Пришел на Украину, чтобы убивать украинцев.
I came to Ukraine to kill Ukrainians for a one-room apartment. Now, this is something that I've heard repeated across, you know, like even from freaking Russian women. But they're encouraging their guys to go over and do this crap, or they'll marry somebody that's going to the front line, because if they get killed and they actually get the death benefits paid out to them and they don't get a brick, like we've seen in the past, that they'll be able to purchase a freaking one-bedroom apartment.
За однокомнатную квартиру.
Я пришел убивать украинцев, чтобы потратить деньги на реабилитацию дочери.
В Самарской области 400 тысяч дают.
Обещали 2,200.
А деньги половина жены онлайн она открыла.
Half the money my wife took online. Well, it's good to know that stuff like that takes place over inside of Ukraine as well.
Забрала то, что семья.
Супруга хотела купить дом. Я не планировал никого убивать.
У нас ни телефонов, документы все изымают. Ведем по рации.
Сказала, идите вперед, там сидите.
Говорят, налево, направо, прямо. Нас вели и говорили, что будем сидеть на закрепах. Не то, что будете там убивать и так далее.
Дед попал, когда сами сдались в бункере, сидели. Нам кричали, сдавайтесь в плен первый день.
They took us forward, told us that we're going to be sitting in consolidated positions, And on the first day, they actually ended up surrendering because the Ukrainians told them to surrender. Now, something else that's really interesting, I want you to take a look at how emaciated some of these individuals actually look. John Wilson coming in, gifting out 20. That's 20 Speak the Truth memberships. Appreciate you, brother. I want you to take a look at how, like, starved some of these people look, right? Pay attention to that. All right? Palestinians that are listening, Palestinian supporters that are listening, this is what famine looks like, all right? People that are on the brink of freaking death from not eating enough, all right? Like, I could go all the way back to that, like, that first guy that they ended up playing. Where is he at? No, that guy. Holy freaking cow, man. That dude, he's hungry. Trust me on that one. Let's go ahead and continue on.
Плен, первый день. Старше не давали.
Я пробыл полторы недели. Вот по полям дошли до...
This guy spent a week and a half total before he ended up getting surrendered, before he ended up getting captured and made it to the bunker. And I want you to start taking a look at his face. I want you to take a look at his clothes. I want you to take a look at how crappy he actually looks. Like, that man is rapidly losing weight.
В бункера, и все, и там сдались. Честно, я хочу как-нибудь попасть заново на войну.
Буду дальше детей воспитывать.
Let's look at this guy. Again, not exactly in peak physical condition, number one. Number two, like, I'm in better shape than that guy at 41 freaking years old, right? And this guy looks like he's, again, definitely losing weight. He's got nothing on his shoulders. His freaking neck looks like shit. And again, they all shaved heads, which is telling me that they're fresh up over the front line because they're shaved heads, but they're growing out just a tad bit. This guy apparently is just one of the freaking fat dudes that ended up making it through and getting his butt up over the front. But again, look at how short their hair is and how much it's grown out. Again, fresh up over to the front.
Все будет хорошо, и ты вернешься.
Хоть без рук, хоть без ног, но живой.
Дай бог, чтобы быстрее вернулся.
Украинская армия, они нас связали, дали воды, дали сигарет, ну и все, и отправили сюда.
Относятся хорошо, кормят, поют.
Не бьют.
Сравнить то, что у нас в России, когда нам шли 2 недели по этим лесополкам, нам ни поесть не давали.
When we were moving on the front line through the forest for 2 weeks, we weren't given any food or water. Back that up again. Boop, boop, boop. When we were moving for 2 weeks along the forest belts, we weren't given neither food nor water. And you might be asking, how is it that they're able to survive? Well, there is some infrastructure that's in place, and there is other things out there like water and creek beds and things like that, and people can boil water. And so when you start looking at these guys and why they look like absolute trash, that is why.
Ни поесть не давали, ни воды. Мы шли голодные. Только ягоды, которые кустарники вот растут, воду набирали из болота.
There you go. I totally forgot that even existed. We drank water from the swamps. They ate berries as they were walking. That's how crappy these dudes' lives suck. And when I tell you guys that they have a major freaking supply issue, that they can't get things to the front, is exactly what I'm talking about.
Если ты идешь на контакт, тебе никто не...
I hope you guys get a good understanding of what's actually up on the front. Tammy says, wow, they got captured really quick. Yeah, they absolutely did, right? And it's important to bring kind of the attention to the actual state of the Russian military because, you know, people think for some reason that Russia is going to be able to hold out, but they absolutely can't, right? Got told that these guys are actually in a heck of a lot further than they really are. Now, this is just to what? The southwest, right? Of where the Russians ended up punching through the lines and ended up getting told that they've moved a heck of a lot further than 11 kilometers. And they're basically in operational silence over there where they've been pushing and beating those Russians back. And so expect here in the next day or two, because this isn't going to be able to be kept that quiet for very long, as you guys can currently see in the next day or two, absolutely expect to see a lot more videos and a lot more information coming out of Pokrovsk, because over there, they're getting their frickin' poo-poo kicked in right now, from what I can understand, that's coming off of the front line. So the Russians are getting forced back. Now, again, if we have these captured soldiers just to the north of that position that haven't been given food, haven't been given water, I want you to think about that. That is valuable intelligence that the Ukrainians are getting and receiving off of these guys that they're frickin' recovering off the front line. What does that tell you about the morale and frickin' state of the rest of the troops that are on the front line? Means it's pretty freaking low in that particular region. And if I was to take the map and blow it up for you, I can point out to where all of their logistical concerns and all that other crap is over there and why it's so freaking bad. It's absolutely disgusting. And it's not even that. I mean, here's a freaking Russian 122 millimeter MLRS that ended up getting freaking taken out over near Pokrovsk. Here, I'll just put it up on the screen and let it play. I can't do the music, man. I can't. It's just not my thing. So the drone warfare, number one, is very, very real over there. And number two, you have issues with Russians making it through anywhere because there's only certain routes now that they can travel on to get their stuff up over to the front. And so when we start talking about logistical constraints that they're currently facing when it comes to fuel and things like that, the next compounding issue that they are facing on the front is the constriction of those routes. Now, the Ukrainians are well aware of these routes and where the Russians are trying to push through, and all they have to do is monitor them. It's essentially a massive kill zone for freaking drones for the Ukrainians to be able to take that stuff out. And if they sat there and did this long enough, they're obviously going to be able to take out even more. Here's some freaking enemy infantry that ended up getting taken out over near Pokrov. So let's see that up on the screen. Again, I'm going to have to end up muting this video because there's only so much I can take. All right. Here you got some drones coming in order to take them out. Now, again, when we start talking about limited space, limited maneuver space for these Russians to be able to move in on, this is exactly what it looks like. All right. They're able to spot these dudes in the open, even if they end up going to the brush, and they're able to take them out. There you've got freaking thermals that are freaking watching them. All right. These guys don't get to hide. And so Ukraine's going to know exactly where they're at. Ditch, did I hear that Ukraine struck a Russian company or an American company in Ukraine? Yes, I did. We're about to go over that because Russia launched a massive freaking drone attack last night. Yesterday, over inside of Poland, a freaking, I want to say it was a Shahid, ended up landing and freaking damaging a building and stuff over inside of freaking Poland. All right. So that within itself is an issue, but this freaking facility within itself that ended up getting struck is really, really far away. And last night you ended up having the Ukrainians hiding out again because Russia decided to launch this massive freaking attack going over there. And so I don't think Trump's going to be very freaking happy with Putin as they're trying to negotiate the ceasefire. And he's telling his troops and forces to push, number one, and number two. And number two, he continues to launch massive attacks on the civilian population. This was another massive freaking wave. Nicholas Viney says it was 68 miles into Poland. That's right. People are saying, well, what's Poland going to do about that? In my opinion, absolutely nothing. Because we've already had two cruise missiles, I think, in the early days of the war that actually landed inside Poland as well. And Russia was like, nope. They just let the crap happen. You've seen stuff land also, I think, over in Moldova, several other locations, right? Like all in those little border regions, and nobody ever does anything. It's always like written off. All these civilians are continuing to get hammered, and it's always getting written off. But probably their biggest mistake, let me see if I have it right here before I pulled up, was the strike of this company right here, which is Flex. Now, I looked into this company, did a little bit of background research on it, allowed me to grab the actual initial information that I pulled off of it. Give me a second here. That's their oil refinery stuff. Oh, what did I do with it, man? Please tell me I didn't close that out. Flex is a massive company, and it's American-based. All right, but on top of that, being an American-based company, the other thing that they actually have is they control about... I think it's right around 5 square kilometers is the actual footprint in this company. All right. They have well over 2,000 local national employees over inside of Ukraine. And the only reason I can think that Russia could get away and claim that attacking the site militarily, which is out in the West, is because that they use, what was the word? It's mold injection. It's like plastic mold injection. I'm trying to remember. I actually ended up writing it down a little bit earlier. Where'd it go? But yeah, basically like plastic, but 5.5 kilometers squared, excuse me. And yeah, plastic injection molding takes place inside of that company. And so Russia might be able to look at this and say, well, you know what? This company, maybe they were producing drone parts or maybe they were doing this because they've got plastic injection molding, right? Is the one thing that I looked into. But they have zero ties whatsoever to the United States government. They get zero government funding, and they produce zero defense equipment or zero equipment for injection molding. Thanks, Mike. They produce zero equipment for the military industrial complex. It's not their business model. It's not what they do. But when you start talking about the major strikes that Ukraine has been landing over on Russia and the impact that those strikes have had on the Russian economy, and you look at it, to Matt, that makes a little bit more sense for Russia to go after a business like this because it does have such a large footprint. And not only that, it employs 2,000 people. It's a multi, it's an international company, right? Based out of the U.S. And they've got a massive plant over in Ukraine. Like I said, like 5.5 kilometers squared, right? Worth of a footprint over inside of Ukraine, employing 2,000 people. So imagine what shutting that plant down does to the freaking economy. And Russia, in their slimy little ways, can sit back and go, well, they use injection molding. So, I mean, maybe they're producing things for the defense industry. No. You just legitimately attacked a freaking legitimate, yeah, coffee machines and crock pots. Thank you, Texas. Coffee machines and freaking crock pots. They don't freaking produce, like, they produce shit like that. It is not anything that should be looked at as a legitimate military target. And yes, crock pots, LOL. Yes, Linda, crock pots. This is right up freaking Russia's alley, man. Dude, it's been leaked that Ukraine lost 1.7 million KIA plus wounded and Russia has broken the front line. Where you get your info from? Because it's you are speaking nonsense. Okay, David, fine. Well, number one, that hasn't been leaked. If that was leaked, I would love to know your source and where that actually came from, because that's not legitimate at all. Also, the updates on the front line come from geolocated footage. I'll say that again. Your updates on the front line come from geolocated footage. Geolocated footage. So you don't get to come back and say that they're not over there occupying these different areas and haven't freaking cut them off and taken back that specific terrain. So I'm sorry that bothers you, but just like everybody else in the world, it seems that facts bother the freaking Russian, like, nutheads. Oh, Chuck Holton's in the house. Let them know. Oh, welcome, Chuck. Good to have you on today, friend. Always good to know who's creeping in the background. You don't get to come in and pretend like it's not happening when there's geolocated footage that has been concerned or confirmed, and that's where it's going. You don't get to blow that off. You don't get to pretend like it's not happening. This is not a propaganda channel. I don't sit here and I don't push propaganda. The only thing that I'll push, all right, is anti-radical Islamic jihad narrative, because, yeah, I am impartial. I don't like radical Islam, and neither should you. Chuck Holton says, I've spent 7 months in Ukraine, and I promise you, are spouting incorrect information. And bingo. Oh my goodness. Chuck, good to have you, man. Hope your travels are treating you well as you're sitting out there on the road today. It blows my mind, like, the different stuff that, like, people are losing their minds over. Now, I talked to you guys about the effects of the Russian oil refineries getting struck and how that's been affecting people over inside of Ukraine, inside of Russia, inside of freaking occupied Crimea, how it's affecting actual logistical efforts that are taking place. We had another oil refinery get freaking struck overnight inside of Russia. It accounts for about 3% of Russia's refining capabilities, and it's over in Novosheltinsk. Probably ended up pronouncing that freaking one wrong. Here's another oil refinery that ended up getting taken out in a drone strike. I went over, looked it up, confirmed it, ended up checking local and international sources to make sure that this, in fact, did go down. Drone strike ended up targeting this one. So while Russia was busy slamming into freaking American businesses and scaring civilians across Ukraine, Ukraine ended up going after a legitimate military target that's going to put more and more stress on the Russians. When they're running around on the front line like that and they do not have the ability to take care of that, this is the problem. Right, this is going to be a major problem for Russia. These, like, oil, like, all of these refineries that get taken out is a massive, massive issue. I gave you guys a total rundown in the numbers, and we'll just go ahead and add one more to this. Give me one sec as I pull these numbers up. I talked about this last night. Let's see here. It accounts for about 13.5% of their total capacity that they ended up going on. And if we go over July to present day, so July 1 to present day, we have now 10 different distinct sites across Russia Two pipeline infrastructure stations that have been struck for a total of 13 targets just from July 1 to today that have affected about 13 to 13.5% of Russia's ability to produce and refine oil. That is a huge problem when it accounts for 30% of their GDP. Their people can't get freaking oil. They're like, you know, semi trucks and stuff like that that are moving and supporting the economy can't ship stuff across the freaking country. And vehicles, number one, are just screwed along the front line. But there's something else that goes into it that a lot of people don't know. And if you worked in the oil field, I really hope Nate Vance was listening today, because I almost wanted to bring him up and talk about this part. Is that as they're refining this oil, you actually end up getting other byproducts that end up coming off of that that they use for all sorts of other stuff as well. So they take those byproducts from refining oil, from making like petrol, gasoline, you know, like liquefied freaking gas, like all that crap. They take those byproducts, and a lot of those byproducts ended up getting used in plastic and different industrial needs. So you're not just affecting their ability to send freaking, you know, oil to the front line to continue to like, you know, push this war effort. You're also affecting their ability to manufacture very critical components, very critical things that are needed up over on the front line. We also have over inside of Russian occupied areas of Ukraine down in the south, by brain farting the freaking name of it, another train. So now this is what, 2 days in a row, 2 days in a row that we have these Russian supply trains, they're being struck. Now, these supply trains filled with all of these different petroleum products are not making their way to the front. They're not going to be able to fuel those vehicles. What does that mean? That means Russia doesn't have the ability to actually maneuver. They can't just push people in on the ground. You need some freaking support. And you need, let's say you're going to push people on the ground via foot, you still need the oil for the logistical supports for behind the front, because those soldiers are shooting on a daily basis. Somebody's got to move the artillery rounds forward. Somebody's got to move the tank rounds forward. Somebody's got to move the freaking drones forward. Somebody's got to move the explosives forward. Somebody's got to move the mines forward. Somebody has to move these soldiers forward to eventually they kick them off the trucks and tell them to dismount and start to walk. So all of these things have a much broader impact than most people realize when you start going after the logistical supplies. Ask freaking Nazi Germany what one of their biggest constraints was that caused them to fail during World War II when they invaded Russia in the wintertime. Yeah, the winter was absolutely brutal on them. But the other major thing that they did was they outpaced their supply lines. And that winter and the outpacing of their supply lines allowed those Nazis to just get absolutely decimated. That, in conjunction with the Lend-Lease program that was going in and funding a lot of the freaking Russia war effort, allowed, all right, those Nazis to get crushed. Exorcist, what's up, Matt? I'm a former 11. Chuck, love the channel. I always wanted to ask, what was your MOS when you joined the Army? 11B? Yes, I was 11 Bravo. Well, when I joined the Army, I came in as 11 X-ray. I didn't realize that made it so that I don't think we had 11 mics back then. And for those of you guys that didn't know, 11 mics were like mechanized infantry. I think they had just switched everything over right before I came in, but I didn't know about any of this stuff. But I came in as 11X, and when I was at the 30th AG, they essentially took and they drew a line as we were like in the line waiting for chow. And they're like, everybody this point forward is going to be 11 Charlie. Everybody this point and behind is going to be 11 Bravo. That's what ended up happening. So that's how I got smashed with the MOS of 11 Bravo. And thank God I did, because it's actually the job that I wanted. My recruiter was like, nah, don't worry about it, man. You're going to be an 11B. Wrong. Didn't quite understand that. Also, funny story, didn't even realize that I had airborne in my contract. Had no flipping clue. They had us pull out our contracts when we were in basic training. They were like, hey, go flip to paragraph X of your contract. If you have this, then you're going to airborne school next. I was like, what the heck? I'm going to jump school? And I found this out like a week before graduation. Tristan Allen says, good morning, Matt, and Speak the Truth family. Get after it in Ukraine. Keep doing what y'all do. Thank you very much, Tristan Allen. Really, really do. Greatly, greatly appreciate you, sir. Really, really greatly appreciate that. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is probably going to end up summing up things for this morning. Oh, wait a minute. What else do I have? Oh, I almost forgot. Almost forgot. Couldn't get away without doing this one. Ukrainian Flamingo cruise missile production is out of control.
Weapon production is a huge guarantee of Ukraine independence, but also European safety. The maximum range is 3,000 kilometers confirmed, with an accuracy of 14 meters to target on this distance. And the payload capacity is, in the moment, 1,150 kilograms. The overall technical characteristics is not much different from a Shahed. Of course, it has different construction, but the function is the same, despite of the fact that it can go a little bit more far, has a little bit of bigger payload, and is a little bit more advanced in terms of precise hit to a specific target. Right now, Ukraine is holding this barrier, and let's say it's exporting safety to other countries which are standing behind Ukraine.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, there you go. And they've also released another video on cruise missile production that's also taking place over inside of Ukraine. And that again, Ukraine's producing all of their own stuff. Figures and numbers that they have coming out, they're going to be able to continue to ramp up production. So they're going to be producing multiple of these suckers every single month, and they're not going to go anywhere. They're going to continue to crank these things out. So while Ukraine is reliant on the West for a good chunk of a lot of their munitions, they are also ramping up production over inside of Ukraine, including those little fiber optic drones that you guys now see dominating the freaking battlefield. When I showed you that that Russian MLRS that got taken out earlier, what do you think that was that ended up destroying that MLRS? Right? We're not talking about sending out, and that's what, like a $3 million system at least, right? And so it's not like massive munitions. It's not the ATACMS right now that are going over and having this massive effect. It's not even really artillery anymore that's having that massive effect, right? Ukraine is able to take and produce cheap, tiny little drones, bypass all of the stuff, and be able to get that stuff over on the front line. And they're doing that on their own. It's amazing. They're actually kind of leading the way in drone production, believe it or not. U.S. military is way behind. We do have some great ideas. We do have some great things. But I know for a fact we're way behind when it comes down to our drone capabilities. When I'm talking about the little ones, like the ones that are used by soldiers, and they're doing a very, very good job on it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't yet, and you like this type of content, and you like getting actual facts and not being lied to, you better be subscribed to the channel, right? Because I'm going to give you some straight facts that are coming into it, coupled with my war knowledge and war experience. We're going to talk about things over here in the United States as well. But if you like actual situational assessments and frontline updates and knowing what the heck's going on, make sure you subscribe to the channel. Now, we're going to go ahead and creep into the daily devotional here at the end of the show. All right. If you guys aren't Christian, feel free to stick around. If you are Christian, stick around. If you're wondering, I don't care wherever you're at, but it's for everybody. If you don't like it, feel free to back out. Perfectly okay with that. But I want you guys to hear what I have to say, because it's good advice for life just in general. And this one's going to come out of 1 Corinthians 6:18. And I quote, "Flee from sexual immorality. All other sins a person commits are outside of the body, but whoever sins sexually sins against their own body." Now, the key word in this is flee. And when I think about like the fleeing portion of it, and I look and I read that, it's not avoid, it's not like anything, but quite literally says flee. And if we take that outside of sexual immorality, and we take that outside of, sinning against your own body, right? And we take that and we broadcast that out to all the other sins and all the other temptations that we end up facing here in life, you shouldn't be moving towards these things. You shouldn't be hanging around them. You shouldn't be doing your best to avoid them. It quite literally says flee. It doesn't say sit around and wait. It doesn't say let's see what happens. It says flee, 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 flee. Don't be there. Get away. So some of that is easier said than done. But the key to this, when you really think about it, is avoiding those situations altogether that lead you towards sin. If you avoid them and you're actually walking in faith and you're doing the right thing, all of a sudden, well, guess what? That temptation is no longer in your life because you have fled from it. There is no point to be around it. So avoid it. Not just avoid it. Flee. Run. Go away. Prayer is going to go along with it today. Lord, thank you very much for everything that we've been given in life. Help us to flee from all of our sins. Don't let us be tempted by it. Don't let us walk near it. Give us the strength that we need. We already know it's inside of us, but help us understand that strength and help us to walk closer by your side every single day. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me for another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. See you guys on this evening. Wow, man, what time am I going to be back here? 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Look forward to seeing you guys. Chuck, thanks for stopping by, my friend. Texas, everybody else that's in the house is giving out memberships today. You guys, I love you. Love you, love you, love you. Peace, love, happiness, and God bless. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm out of here.